Digital 410 Media proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts, Don Abernathy, Jeff Copsetta, and Dennis Blocker.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, your favorite World War II-based podcast. And boy, howdy, do we have an episode tonight. I'm not even going to bog you guys down with the promos and this and that and the request for you to go do these other things. We're going to get straight to it. Jeff, do us the enormous pleasure of presenting this week's guest.
It is an enormous pleasure, and it was an honor to meet this man in person a few weeks ago. Dennis and I had that unique, distinct pleasure. And joining us tonight is the one and only Captain Dale Dye. If you let's just say this, if you've seen a military movie in the last 40 years, you know who Dale Dye is. He comes with just no introduction. His reputation precedes himself, but what we want to do tonight is find out a little bit more about the man, about what he has created, and get into some of his other work, like being an author as well. It's really interesting to note that. I was not familiar with that till recently. So, Captain Dye, again, thanks for taking your time out and joining us tonight.
Oh, I'm glad to, guys. It's one of my favorite topics, so we're right in the wheelhouse.
Absolutely, and we kind of planned this around that 80th anniversary of the invasion of Peleliu, of course. I talked to Scott about a week ago before he hit Guam, and I told him I wish I was there with him and have fun and everything over there. As I mentioned before, of course, as a former Marine, sir, of over 20 years, obviously you were probably a Mustang after 20 years getting out as a captain. It's either that or you just did something really wrong.
Well, it might have been both, but I was 3 years of Mustang before I got my commission. So.
Outstanding. And a tour in Vietnam as well.
Several.
Yeah. So, what I was curious about was, how does that, your military service, how did that play into you starting Warriors, Inc.? And what did that transition look like? And I ask you that because from a former service member myself, and I'm a teacher now, I'm a high school teacher, and they ask me all the time, how does that help you? And a lot of times, it doesn't help at all. That's a whole different world. And so curious as to how much you took from the Marines to start Warriors, Inc.
Well, the plain fact of the matter is I took everything. What prompted me to have come up with this concept was that most of the military movies I had seen, and I think I'd seen them all, the common denominator was they pissed me off. And the reason was it didn't reflect who I knew professional military people were. And it certainly had a false imagery, a false depiction of what combat is and how people react in combat. And I couldn't figure it out. Frankly, you know, I'm a Marine and I pick my nose a lot and eat crayons, so I couldn't figure these things out. What is it? Why was Hollywood doing this? Don't they know what the truth is? And more importantly, in my view, don't they know that the truth, the way things are, who we are, how we relate to each other, and what combat really is so much more interesting, so much more dramatic, really, than what they were coming up with, these writers who'd never spent a day in uniform had come up with. And I said, well, that's a terrible mistake. And not only that, it's a disservice to those of us who wear the uniform or wore it, and those of us who fought, no matter when the war was, because I believe the warrior spirit is the same throughout history. Somebody's got to fix this. And when you're ignorant, you can do a lot of things that people tell you you can't do, and that was certainly my case. So I said, well, screw it. I'm just going to fix bayonets, and I'm going to go out there in L.A. and square that place away. It didn't quite work out that way. I retired. But to direct myself back to your question, I had this, what the Marine Corps had taught me was that you don't give up in the face of frustration. Usually frustration comes because you don't know something. So I set about to try to find out how this movie business worked. Who are the movers and shakers? Who are the generals and the colonels and the gunnies? And how do I get in there and influence that? And it took me about a year. And frankly, my concept, which once again, to your question, came from my experience in the Marine Corps. How do you teach people? Well, you reduce them to the lowest common denominator, and then you build them into a unit, and then you teach them, and you do it in kind of a crawl, walk, run method. So that's what I thought we should do with actors. They should have some sort of concept, some sort of idea of who we are and how we do things and what combat is like before they try to depict us. And so, as I said, I wasn't having very much luck with this. People would look at me and say, hey, you, two things here. First of all, we don't do that to actors. And secondarily, you're some kind of Marine or something, aren't you? And you were in there for 20 years, two decades. How could you conceivably have a creative bone in your body? So get out of my house.
Wow.
Well, I was gonna...
and there I was. I mean, and so I call it Hollywood hubris. Hmm. And frankly, it was a tough deal going up against it. And I was out there for about a year and really, really exercising what the Marine Corps had taught me. And that is don't give up. Don't give up. This concept is there. You may be broke. You may be couch surfing in your buddy's apartments. And you may be tremendously frustrated, but don't give up. This concept is correct. It's proper. All you've got to do is find a guy who will understand it. So after about a year, I was about to give up. I was about to say, okay, I think I got beat here. I didn't make the connection. And then that epiphany moment came. You may have heard this before, but I had learned to read the trade papers, the Hollywood trade papers like Daily Variety and Backstage and that sort of thing, the Hollywood Reporter. And I noticed a column, a little notice in a column, a little blurb in a column that said, a heretofore relatively unknown writer-director by the name of Oliver Stone is going to do a movie based on his own experience as a combat infantryman in Vietnam. And I said, whoa, there it is. I got to find this guy. If anybody will understand the concept at full immersion training, because he's been through it, he will. And I set about making that one meeting, making that one contact. And I can't really tell you how I did it, because the statute of limitations may not have run out yet. But suffice to say that I managed to get myself a meeting with Oliver Stone's producer. And I pitched him and I said, look, all I want is 5 minutes. If you'll give me 5 minutes with this guy, just say veteran to veteran, so he'll get it. If I could just talk to him, I think I can guarantee you that he'll understand what I'm talking about. So he was cutting another movie at the time in Hollywood. It was Salvador. And they arranged for me to go into his cutting room and talk to him. And they said, you got 3 minutes. And I said, oh, shit, this is, I'm now in 2 minute drill here. So I went in and I hit the position of attention and I commenced. And I told him what I thought was wrong with military movies and how we should fix it. And that he ought to know that. And I certainly know that from our combat experience. If we're going to truly do a depiction of what it was like for certain units, not all units, but certain units in Vietnam, then he should understand what I'm trying to tell him is needed here. And lo and behold, I don't know whether I sold him or not, frankly, because, you know, they elbowed me out of the cutting room after a while. And I went home in my buddy's house, actually. And I said, oh, I don't know. I think I may have screwed the pooch here. I think I may have just blown my last shot. And that day, the phone rang and it was Stone's producer. And he says, Oliver likes what you have to say. Come in and we'll make a deal. And I did. And without running you through that whole drill, he ended up giving me 33 actors and 3 weeks in the mountains of the Philippines.
Wow.
And you know, Commander's intent, what he said was, when you bring them down out of those mountains, they better be who we were as 19-year-olds in Vietnam. Now, that's the commander's intent. Wow. Those are orders, carry it out. And, you know, I had these guys, I had no concept about movie stars or that sort of thing. I just didn't know doodly squat. I was making it up. And that's, once again, I go to your question, I was making it up on the fly, just like just as you do typically when, you know, the gunny says, go there and move those sandbags. Well, what sandbags? Did you figure it out? And so I had guys who are now were no big name then, but certainly are now. I had Charlie Sheen and Willem Dafoe and Forrest Whitaker, Tom Berenger, on and on and on. So what I did was I said, look, if I was running an infantry training regiment, or you guys call it what? IT, I can't remember what the Marine Corps calls it now, but it's what comes after boot camp. How would I do that? And I said, well, you know, this has got to be full immersion. So these guys have got to dig a hole and live in that hole with me for the next 3 weeks. And I'm going to wear their ass out. And I'll probably feed them twice a day if they don't piss me off that day. And we went through it, and I let them have it. And I had enlisted a couple of reserve Marines who were buddies of mine to go with me and serve as OPFOR, what we call the Switchblade Force. And those were the guys who attacked at night and all that sort of thing. And, you know, I ran them through it, and it was 24 hours a day, all night ops, all day ops. And, you know, they really could not get away from it. Their whole deal for that 3 weeks was, how do I not piss off that white-haired guy? How do I survive this? But when we brought them down out of there, they were amazing. They looked and felt and talked and acted just like we did when we were 19 in Southeast Asia. And the upshot, frankly, was that we brought that little $5 million film home, and that's all we had. We had $5 million in the bank, not a penny more. We brought it home, and lo and behold, we won 4 Academy Awards, including Best Picture and Best Director for Oliver. And, as they say, nothing succeeds like success in Hollywood. And suddenly my phone was ringing off the wall, and I actually had a phone now. And I formed this company. And I formed the company, according to my Marine Corps training. The IRS was a little suspicious of it, but when I formed my company, I didn't have a CEO or a CFO or an office manager and that thing. What I had was a commanding officer, an executive officer in the company, gunny, and a battalion adjutant. And I actually wrote those on tax forms, which got me a couple of visits from the IRS.
I'm sure.
But that's essentially how it happened, and I've talked way too long. I'm sorry, but
that's amazing.
No, I'm just looking at your IMDb as you're talking about this, and from the word jump, I mean Platoon. You also did Invaders from Mars that same year. But I'm looking as time. You did two films in '87. You did three in '88. You did five in '89. It's like you went from trying to get your foot in the door into like probably figuring out how the hell am I going to fit all this into my schedule. I mean,
threw a frag in the hooch.
Absolutely. But, I mean,
yeah. I mean, we added it up the other day, and I tell you guys, I can't believe it. We had to do another interview. Somebody wanted to interview me about my career, and we added it up, and it's something like 90 some movies or television shows that I've done. And that includes things like music videos and live performances. So I don't know. I mean, it just it exploded. And the more it exploded, the more I understood. I had a tiger by the tail here.
Mm-hmm.
I had an opportunity to influence audiences around the world. And affect their opinion of who we are as military people. to explain things about our weird sense of humor, about why we act the way we do sometimes, and the effect that combat can have on us. I could depict the absolute best of human nature and the absolute worst of human nature, which happens in combat. You see both sides. And that was a powerful tool. And I said, you know, I can't screw around with this. This is live ammo. And if I'm going to do this, I've got to do it right. So at that point, I really started to formulate things. I really started to say, look, I have a responsibility here. I have a responsibility because I now have access to the popular media. I have a responsibility to everybody who's ever worn a uniform, actually, and to shine some long overdue and well-deserved light on their service and their sacrifice. So I always kept that in mind, and that turned out to be our motto. Actually, our motto is, we'll do anything from the Peloponnesian Wars to Star Wars. And we've screwed around, just about done that.
Yeah.
But we always had that that onus, that weight on us that said, look, careful what you do and careful how you do it, because you need to be accurate. And yet, you can't sugarcoat things. You can't be a propagandist. There have been bad things happen in America's wars, and we've got to not be afraid to expose those things. But we must expose them in context. And so, philosophically, that's where I went. That's where I'm still going, I think.
It's good. Oh,
and I guess let me just say a word about books. I guess I've written 12 or 13 of them now. And the reason I do it, the reason I run a publishing company now, frankly, is because it's part and parcel of what I was just telling you about. In every way I have available to me, using every talent that I have, that I've been blessed to have, I want to get that message out there about who we are, about the warrior spirit, about what we believe and how we act and why we act that way. I want to give people who've never had that experience a little chance to unscrew our heads and look inside. And I do that in every fashion I can find. Themed entertainment, music videos, video games, novels, books, movies, and television. So I'm trying to hit everything with one bat, but there you go.
No, absolutely. And I'll be honest, growing up with Platoon being one of my all-time favorite movies, and that was one of the films that we watched during my tour in Baghdad. In fact, that was the first time I saw Band of Brothers as well. I was deployed there March of 04 to March of 05, so that was, you know, that was fresh stuff at the time. And if you did nothing else besides Platoon, I feel like you did it all. And because a lot of the guys I served with, we still have the friendly argument over a beer or two that Barnes or Elias.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Elias, you know, Barnes or Elias.
Listen, I had that argument. And I don't want to answer.
Right. But what you'd said there really kind of struck a chord too with me. And it leads me to my second question for you. And we talked a little bit about this in Fredericksburg as well. You know, I had a similar role to use as a military advisor for an independent film here in Texas, and was brought on because of my combat experience. And I struggled with some of that same stuff with, you know, I remember the lead actor putting on a pair of Marine Corps trousers, and they were a little tight around the waist. And I made the comment, well, fat body, you're on half rations the rest of this trip. You need to fit into those trousers. And I had a talking to that's not how you talk to actors. But how do you, in your mind, how do we balance what people really need and what we want? Because we do, you know, I think there's a good portion of the American public that wants these military movies, wants to remember the sacrifice and honor what, oh, my grandfather did that, or my great uncle, or my dad was drafted for Nam. But how do you balance sometimes the inaccuracies are necessary for the film, or there's not enough, you know, character development, so you got to give that guy a mustache so you can remember him. How do you balance that, or is that a case-by-case scenario based on the director?
Well, look, it is a case-by-case scenario, and I've got to tell you, in all honesty, I think we've won 8 Academy Awards and 13 Emmys at this point on films that we've worked on. So I don't have a lot of that problem. If it's a cap and die film, there's a whole, I come at it now from a little bit of a perspective of power. I walk in and say, look, guys, I'm going to do this. I'm going to help you. But you have to recognize, A, that I'm a dramatist. So I'm on your side. I get storytelling. I get how to do this. I've learned how to do this. And you have to move in my direction by saying we want it to be as accurate as it can. Now, that doesn't mean flag waving all the time. It can be brutally accurate to the point that you know we've screwed up here. But that may be the story. And it may well be the story that needs to be revealed. So early on, to get to your original question, I did have a hell of a time with that balance. And I think I'm enough of a bullshit artist that I could get in there. If I'm saying something horrible, let me know. But
no, you're good. You're good.
I think I was able to schmooze to convince them that I might have an element here that they want to pay attention to. I didn't hard ass them. I didn't go in there and say, oh, you people are screwed up like Hogan's goat. I'm through. I'm walking out of here. And if I ever see anybody that looks like you, I'll kill them. That was never going to work. And I knew it wasn't. So I found a balance where I could respectfully, kind of like you do with a lieutenant. You know, if you're a gunnery sergeant and you got this lieutenant and you know that he commands the platoon, but he's got his head up his butt and he clearly doesn't know what's going on. You can't go just say, Lieutenant, pull your head out of your ass. You got to go over there and say, sir, look, and you explain it to him. That's kind of what I did. I kind of used that tact, which is part of one of the leadership traits. I kind of used that tact to go over and say, you know, let me suggest. And I tried to make it a habit never to say no. No, period. I would say no, but, because I would always have in my pocket the suggestion that would be a better way of going at it and a more accurate way of going at it and a better depiction of the situation that was going on. So you're right. You're absolutely right that it was, it's a tough balance. And it's not something, you bring your Marine Corps tact to it as a leadership trait. But it's experience. You just got to get your pee-pee whacked every once in a while, and you got to stand at attention and say, okay, I lose this one, and you back off. Fortunately, nowadays, I don't have that problem.
Well, it had to be rewarding and helpful that one of your first projects, or the first project, Platoon, was such a great film and looked at with such reverence. And I'm sitting here trying to think how different that